You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Sixteen teams, one trophy. The NBA playoffs are here, and all roads lead to the finals. Will NBA champions like Jokic and Giannis dominate the playoffs again, or will emerging stars like Anthony Edwards and Jason Tatum solidify their names in NBA history? The playoffs are where legends are made, and TNT will make sure you don't miss a moment of the action. Tune in to TNT's coverage of the NBA playoffs presented by Google Pixel on TNT, True TV, and Max.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Who's the craziest guest you think the show's ever had?
Richard Lewis.
Yeah, The Iron Sheik is a great shout.
Poor Richard Lewis turned down the marathon. He's recovering from surgery still. Sucks that everybody has to die, huh?
That does stink.
There's an opinion.
You think we'll ever get past it?
People dying?
Yeah.
Death?
Everyone always thinks they're the generation. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. They're going to figure out something.
I think we will probably, in our lifetimes, prolong death by a significant amount. But I don't think we'll make it out of the question.
Stugatz, when you were 20, how long did you think you were going to live? And how long do you think you're going to live now?
When I was 20, I remember saying, I'll take, sign me up for 75 right now.
Yeah. Maybe the Secret Squid Society's figured it out and they just haven't told us yet.
There are animals that live much longer than humans, Billy.
You know, that and trees, I just don't want to hear about it. How old turtles are, please. Who actually knows how old a turtle is? Enough.
Would you want to live as long as these trees lived?
Guys,
what a boring life it must be to be a tree.
To be a tree?
Yeah, we're going to be live in 20 seconds, guys.
Yeah.
I'll save it.
Yeah, save it. Save it for the air.
The world missed this conversation. Turtles and trees.
Welcome to the Big Suey, a podcast exclusive.
Risky move.
Just when you thought the show could not be more diluted.
Walk the plank.
Bam.
No more free Disney trips.
Now here's the marching band of nowhere.
Arr, matey.
Fat face.
Dan's been stress eating.
And the habitual liar.
Stugatz can't be trusted.
The Big Suey.
Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate radio life for me.
Billy is maximum rodeo clown, rodeo bull. He has been in a hospital eating tiny pudding meals, worried about kid.
He is Max Billy this morning.
He is maximum Billy. Yeah. So let's, Millie Gill, let's go ahead and do this. Let's review some of the week, and he needs to get some of this out because he's shooting shrapnel in every direction. So let's begin with Drake being courtside at a high school game with LeBron. What are your thoughts there, Billy Gill? As you emerge from how old is Mia now? How old? 8 days? 9 days?
2 weeks and a couple days, I think. I don't know. Drake, though, honestly, what's his end game? What is he trying to get? Is he trying to jump on the Bronny land bandwagon before anyone else? Why is he at a high school game? Also, why is he running around on the court? Why is he arguing with the referee? Why is he Drake? Why does he do these things? You know what happens if you run out onto a court and you're not Drake? You get kicked out of the place or arrested. But Drake's just running around all willy-nilly when some high school kid dunks, like, whoa, like he's never seen a dunk. Listen, Drake, and high school kid, I'm sorry to pee on your parade today. Not an impressive dunk. Drake's seen 1,000 dunks more impressive than that high schooler's dunk, okay? So I don't know why he's acting like it's the greatest thing he's ever seen. He goes to dunk contests where people are jumping over cars and Dwight's doing his Superman thing with the phone booth. And that kid dunking had Drake running around into the middle of the court because he was so impressed by a dunk. I just don't buy it. It's
that has to be intimidating to a high school referee, correct? No matter how important the game. The idea that LeBron and Drake are courtside and that Drake feels free enough to get up and argue with the referee. Like, that's something that needs to not be happening. Whatever it is that you think, whether high school kids should have televised games, whether high school kids should be famous, even though it seems to have worked out for LeBron, I believe we could draw the line at Drake needs to not be yelling at a high school referee.
Drake also needs to not care more about the outcome of the game than the parents of the children actually playing the game.
I disagree. I think this makes him a basketball purist. Oh, like, I think I think that Drake just loves the game. He loves basketball, and no matter the level. So you know what? The fact that he gets pumped up about a high school basketball game, I think makes him cooler.
You are the only one who believes that. There is no one thinking that. But I just want to, I simply want to review sports through Billy's.
But wait a minute. Do you think Drake is taking in, like, pickup games at the park? Because these games his basketball purist loves always have cameras around him.
Well, the ones that he attends without cameras, you wouldn't know about because there aren't cameras.
Yeah, but to Billy's point, do you think he's showing up to a game where LeBron's kid's not playing?
No, it's a good point. Yes, to Billy's point, to Billy's very important point. I think we can all agree. I don't think anybody other than, I imagine that the kids at that high school very, very excited to see Drake sitting courtside. But outside of that, I think we could reach, even in a divided America, something close to consensus on, come on, Drake, don't run on the court and yell at the referee, at the high school referee.
What do you think Drake likes more, basketball or attention? Because I feel like it's attention, right? Drake's not watching these games in the 400 level. Drake needs to be courtside. He needs to be running around the court. I'm surprised Drake doesn't take the ball and dunk or enter, like, the halftime contest that they give money to people where he takes, like, half-court shots. This is Drake. Enough of him.
Didn't he warm up with the Kentucky basketball team
at one point?
I think he was on the court doing warm-ups with them, if I'm not mistaken.
He shot air balls, I believe.
Billy somehow also learned over the weekend that Le'Veon Bell was a Chief. He didn't know that even though they were in the Super Bowl. That was something he discovered this weekend when Le'Veon Bell said he will never play for Andy Reid again. Boy, that took a precipitous drop, didn't it? The whole Le'Veon Bell, the most patient runner I've ever seen,
yes.
That became something else very quickly.
And then he apologized the very next day because he did.
The one time that Adam Gase has been vindicated.
Yeah.
Adam Gase ran him out and he was right.
Well, is there more to that story that I missed? Because I wasn't keeping up with everything. But I just saw that Le'Veon kind of ripped Andy Reid. And then he half apologized by saying that there's stuff there and that he's not going to get into it. And it's like, well, if you don't want to get into it, why did you even start it? What happened there? And he was a Chief for how long?
Only a season. And I think he's just mad because he didn't get any carries last year. I think that's the only animosity he has, is that it goes back to his holdout with the Steelers. Ever since he held out for a year, he hasn't had the career in the season that he thought he would have after that.
He didn't play in the Super Bowl. He had like 300 yards. They used him some, but he was one, like, it is a damning indictment, right? Andy, when you get a situation that Adam Gase looks like he's ruined you, you sat out a year. It is looking like one of the most disastrous holdouts in the history of holding out, because he was by consensus.
Well, he did get paid, though.
He got paid some.
Not as much.
He
right?
got paid some. He didn't get paid. I think he took less than what he could have gotten if he had just accepted what he started with. Holds out for a year. The Jets don't know how to use him. He leaves there. A catastrophic mistake by the Jets, right? Did he have a 100-yard game with the Jets? Did he have even 100-yard game with the Jets?
I think he had maybe one, maybe. He had just under 800 yards in his one full season with the Jets. It wasn't good, Dan.
The part that is a really damning indictment of wherever he is in a league that has made the running back disposable and uses up bodies at that position, if Andy Reid can't use you in that offense, you ain't worth much now to the rest of the league. So whatever it is the indictments were when you were a Jet, now you go to the Chiefs. I mean, somebody might sign you, but now you're looking all of a sudden, It's sort of how LeSean McCoy was a Chief as well, where you're like, oh, that's almost done. There's not a lot left in that gas tank. Maybe he can reinvent himself from there. But I think if you can't make it work in that offense as a running back, you can't make it work.
Le'Veon Bell had 87 yards. That was his highest total as a New York Jet. I think LeSean McCoy knew he was done, was fine being on those teams, was fine because he was on the Bucs last year as well and won back-to-back Super Bowls. Le'Veon Bell still thinks he can play and play at a high level. And I think he's proven over the last few years he can't.
To his defense, though, the Chiefs' offense was kind of an embarrassment of riches last season. There wasn't really a lot of space for him in the game plan, so it wasn't completely his fault nor Andy Reid's fault. It just wasn't really a good situation for either of them, and I think he probably still has a couple more years as like a second or third string slot receiver running back hybrid, but he's not the Le'Veon Bell of like 2013 anymore.
It's a rare case in the player empowerment era of a player making a public comment like this, and most people will look at the player and be like, what are you talking about? Like, Andy Reid not only is an incredible coach, but he also seems like an uncommonly nice man for a football coach. Who would have a go at Andy Reid?
Isn't that true, what he's saying there?
Because I guess it is, yes. Who would have a go at Andy Reid, right?
Oh, Jessica's making... Okay, from the maker of We're Not the Top of the Food Chain and there are animals that are smarter than us, Jessica's making a sour face at you, Chris. What? You don't like Andy Reid, Jessica?
No. I think Andy Reid... I don't want to say I love Andy Reid, but, like, he's... I agree, he's very likable, but, like, there's probably... You've never played for him, Woody. There's probably reasons that players don't like him. We don't know the full picture there.
Who are the players that don't like Andy Reid other than Le'Veon Bell?
There's not a lot of ripping of it.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't say it because they know that they're going to get shit on like we're shitting on Le'Veon Bell right now.
Is he a great coach? I mean, do we know that? Without that Super Bowl and Patrick Mahomes, is Andy Reid a great coach?
Fair point.
The people who know about these things that don't do the measurements by winning a Super Bowl and talk about schemes and matchups and game plans, the people who know more than us who are doing the measurements of did he win the last game that I saw him play, say that he is a great coach. Yes, by consensus, without dispute. There is no one among the people who know how to measure these things. There is no one who says he is not. There are questions about his time management, but that's about it.
Yeah, but a couple of years ago, people questioned it. Now he got the ring and no one else questions it. He probably should have two, perhaps three, maybe even four. I mean, he had Donovan McNabb. He had Terrell Owens. I mean, he had some great quarterbacks, great players, great teams, and he should have won last year. He let a 43-year-old quarterback beat him. How great is he?
Hey, seriously. I'm with Billy. Overrated, Andy Reid.
We're not saying it, Dan. We're just asking.
Yeah, we're just asking questions, Dan. You ponder.
Here's one that Stugatz asked one time. This is the expertise of Stugatz right here on this subject.
Go ahead, Andy Reid. Oh, I dare you to go 14-2 and allow Alex Smith to leave Arrowhead Stadium, to leave Kansas City. Go ahead, I dare you. Because of Patrick Mahomes. Because you think you could turn Patrick Mahomes into something that Alex Smith is not. Alex Smith is a very good quarterback. The audacity. First off, to do this to Alex Smith, who's been very good and loyal to Andy Reid and won him a lot of football games, to dangle Patrick Mahomes out there because Andy Reid thinks he's some sort of quarterback whisperer, which he is not, by the way. He is not, because if he was, Alex Smith would be better than he's been the last few years. So I dare.
That's a record for contradiction.
It's on Andy Reid.
That's a world record for Stugatz not paying attention to any of the things he said the sentence before.
Oh, I hate that sound.
I think you should absolutely be banned from ever having a Chiefs opinion again while Andy Reid is there. Like, I do believe that this area should be quarantined, fumigated. You should not be, there should be security outside of this area anytime that you want to give a Chiefs take. You should not have basic American freedoms or human rights around the Chiefs. I believe that's how bad that take was.
Totally fair. But how about Mahomes concentrate on winning a second Super Bowl, not going undefeated? He's talking about 20, you know, hey, get back to the Super Bowl
Super
Bowl.
After I've banned you from any Chiefs opinions, you immediately lurch into the mix with another Chiefs opinion? That's what you do.
You didn't hear what he said, did you?
He was just waiting. No. He doesn't listen. He's just waiting for his turn to talk. His ears don't work. They're not functioning things. They're just skin on the side of his head.
A lot of quarterbacks have a ring, Dan. A lot of coaches have a single ring. Do me a favor. Win two. Validate the first one. Both of you.
Huh?
How do we do this? How do we ban Stugatz from having Chiefs opinions going forward because he's already won by having the very worst one ever given? Like, a Chiefs opinion has never been, there's never been a worse opinion about the Chiefs than the one in the history of people having opinions about the Chiefs.
You think that that Patrick Mahomes should not be focused on winning another Super Bowl, Dan?
Right.
I mean, I just don't understand.
I think that Stugatz shouldn't be allowed to have any opinions on the Chiefs based on the last one. Alex Smith would still be his quarterback.
That's true. 9-7, though, or 10-7 now, 17 games. I don't care how, like 20, you know, it doesn't win a Super Bowl. Okay, Dan, stop worrying about perfection and go win that second Super Bowl. You think Brady's worried about 20-0? No, he's worried about another ring. That's what you worry about. Doesn't matter how he gets to it. Doesn't matter if he loses six games along the way. Just peak at the right time.
As soon as I ban him from having Chiefs opinions, he becomes a fountain of useless Chiefs opinions. Like an unstoppable flume of Chiefs opinions.
Stugatz, you don't think Tom Brady wishes he had that Super Bowl back after the undefeated season just so he could have one more notch on his Tom Brady record book and do something that someone else hasn't done?
I think he's gone on record saying he'd give back Super Bowls to get an undefeated season.
Well, he's got so many that he could.
Right. Mahomes does not. Exactly.
Billy, one more thing. I saw the New York Times on the front page of the New York Times, and I did feel that this was met with a bit of a yawn. Correct me if I'm wrong. Usually, outside of NCAA academic scandals, when in sports there is a cheating scandal of any sort, we rise up with indignation and outrage and judgment and cluck, cluck, cluck about how wrong it is to soil the integrity of the game. But I think we've gotten so used to it in baseball that this substance pitcher talk, while a story in baseball, and I'm not disputing that it's a baseball story, I was surprised to see it on the front page of the New York Times because I thought it was being met around the country with a bit of yawning indifference. Yes, because the investigation, Stugatz, has been thorough. It's thousands of baseballs, and it appears that just about every damn pitcher in the sport is doing something to increase the spin rate. And what's happening is worse offense than you've seen in 60 years in that sport, unwatchable, aesthetic, boring. And Billy, I'm guessing, given how mad you are at the Astros and the Yankees, I'm guessing that you're not one of the people meeting this with yawning indifference.
I'm just tired of it, Dan. I'm tired of this baseball. I'm tired of a story that comes out by Buster Olney that MLB is going to soon release a memo about the cheating. How about just release the memo? How about just say stop cheating? Because the whole premise about why it is that they're putting out there that they're working on a memo that they're going to release later this week, which, by the way, we know what the memo is going to be. Don't cheat. So I don't know what it is that they're doing that's taking so long to come up with this memo. But the reason that they're doing this is because they're hoping that once they put out the memo that says don't cheat, that the cheaters have already stopped cheating because they know that the don't cheat memo is coming. How about don't cheat? How about you knew that the rule was not to do it? So why are you doing it to begin with? And why is it that we're still doing these whole fake memo things and no punishment? Because what's going to happen, I'm telling you what's going to happen with this Manfred, Dan. And don't think that I forgot about that Yankees memo that we still haven't seen because of coronavirus. What's going to happen with this whole thing, Dan, is that they're going to interview all the cheaters and they're going to give them all immunity and no one's going to get punished. No one's going to get punished except the, you know, the Astros manager, who I forgot his name, that he was the only one that got punished in the whole thing when he was the one stopping people from breaking the TVs to begin with. It's such a joke at this point in time. And now that we're free, can we talk about something that we weren't allowed to talk about back in the day? Lewis Brinson got into that All-Star game and Rob Manfred was cheating and taking away those votes because we found that stipulation in the rules saying that the commissioner of baseball could cancel out any votes that he didn't want in there. And all of a sudden there was no votes for old Louis Brinson. And we were told that we couldn't talk about that. But now that we can, something was up there. Do we all agree on that?
I'm shocked to hear that we, quote unquote, we were told not to talk about that because I and me are not in that we. No one told me not to talk about it. You were told not to talk about the fact that Lewis Prince in our show was trying to get him into the All-Star game. And we believe that a lot of people were voting for him because the numbers suggest that when we ask you guys to do something, you do it very strongly. You believe that we were wrong there, and you were specifically told to not talk about it?
Well, I have lots of regrets about that whole situation, but I will say this. It was a bit suspicious with all the signs that we saw showing up that we didn't even get, like, a peek in the top 10. I thought that that was on. Did I think he was going to get in? No. Did I think he would at least make it onto like the leaderboard of like the top 10 or 15? Like, maybe. Was I told or was it suggested, hey, maybe after a somewhat problematic interview with the commissioner of baseball that was a big deal, maybe let's not publicly accuse him of cheating, even though you find in the bylaws that it's within his right to determine which votes are valid and invalid in the All-Star game process? Was I maybe suggested, let's not continue to point that out and possibly accuse someone of doing something by finding these rules in the bylaws? Possibly it was suggested to me on more than one occasion, at which point the campaign kind of just fizzled away.
16 teams, one trophy. The NBA playoffs are here and all roads lead to the finals. Will NBA champions like Jokic and Giannis dominate the playoffs again? Or will emerging stars like Anthony Edwards and Jason Tatum solidify their names in NBA history? The playoffs are where legends are made, and TNT will make sure you don't miss a moment of the action. Tune in to TNT's coverage of the NBA playoffs presented by Google Pixel on TNT, True TV, and Max.
A new book has come out that the Astros evidently were cheating after they said they were cheating. And the question after 2017, the question I have for you, as we were talking earlier about how the integrity of the measurements have been skewed in basketball in the playoffs, because in getting to the greed, in grinding through the bodies, the four best teams at the end of last season, none of them won a single playoff game in the second round. All of them broken, physically broken, and just not as good this year because of the strain put on them. My question to you is there ever a circumstance with a revoked championship by the NCAA or cheating scandal around the Astros? Is there ever a circumstance where the asterisk actually ever means anything, where a championship actually does get taken away in a way that people remember? Or once you've celebrated on the field, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if your entire workplace was rampant with cheating. It can't be taken away. It's just there forever. History records it. And you might get tainted, but you're always going to be the champion. Like, is there any circumstance that you can think of throughout sports history where it doesn't pay to cheat that way because they can't actually take anything from you?
Right.
And in the case of in the case of that stupid baseball scandal where only management got punished, where you had the result distorted by cheating. And I can't think of a circumstance where going back and retroactively taking it ever means anything, ever.
Well, USC has had a national championship vacated because of the Reggie Bush situation. So, like, there are championships that have been vacated. But to your point, no USC fan doesn't remember that season fondly or doesn't remember Reggie Bush running through secondaries fondly, right? It's more about the memories that are created from winning championships. And the Houston fans, if anything, have been galvanized by this cheating scandal. They think that it's us against the world, and it's probably because it is, right? Everyone hates the Astros now. And so, if anything, this is part of their identity, not something to kind of be ashamed of.
Yeah, USC actually never won that national title, and actually Reggie Bush didn't win the Heisman either. They just didn't play those last two games in 2004 and 2005. Right. I don't really remember it. I don't think it happened, Woody, so I kind of, you know, disagree there.
You're the only one.
Was Notre Dame involved somehow?
Brady Quinn could have won something if not for that, you know.
I mean,
Quinn did. He won the Heisman, and they won a national. That's a claimed national championship by Jessica Smetana. So.
I like that. Your own personal record books, Smetty. Sugats, this is amazing. Everyone recognizes the Astros, right, as the World Series champions 2 years ago. No one's taking that away from them. Nobody.
I'm just asking you, what are the real consequences of what we're talking about now that a book has come out and said, what they said even before about their cheating, that's also not true. So on top of being cheaters, they're also liars. And what? They're still champions, whether cheaters or liars.
I would say the Black Sox would be the one. I mean, I'm going back a ways.
1919. Wow. Pre-depression. Okay.
I mean, a book's the wrong way to go about that, though, right? That news has to be broken on Twitter and no one's going to hear about it. Who's going to read a 300-page book talking about how the Astros cheated? Get it on a tweet with 60,000 likes and then we'll see some action, you know?
I think if I've got this right, though, you mentioned the Black Sox. They dumped that World Series, and I don't remember the champion from 1919. I only remember the dumpers, no?
It was the Reds.
Okay, thank you, Roy. So the Reds won.
The big red machine.
That was not the big red machine. That was 60 years before the big red machine. One of the big stories from sports this weekend, and I found this interesting because obviously many of you, and this was just awful to watch, Christian Eriksen, Denmark, ends up having cardiac arrest on the field. They say he was gone, and because a lot of people acted quickly, the captain of the team, I don't know his name, but just did everything, concealed him from camera view, took care of his air passage, consoled his wife. But a lot of people, I found super interesting that a whole lot of people were mad that that was broadcast. And I wanted to ask you guys what you think the responsibility of television is there, because I understand that you're watching that and you are at your escape, you're here for sports, and wow, the mortality of that creeping into your feel good feels really uncomfortable and nobody wants to see it. But I thought the reaction of they shouldn't have broadcast all of that, that was not my opinion when I was watching. And I'm like, you're asking the broadcasters to not be broadcasters as something horrific happens to protect you from feeling bad about something horrific that actually happened. And so I don't know how the group felt about this, because it was a very pervasive reaction. We are uncomfortable around death, and nobody wants to watch that. And not since Hank Gathers was on a court have we been faced that obviously with an athlete in his or her prime just falling on the floor, and you're like, oh my God, did I just witness a death? But what is the responsibility of the broadcast there?
I think it's to, listen, you have no idea it's coming, obviously, so you have to stay with it for a minute to see what's actually happening and provide your audience with the information, with the news of what's happening. And once you've done that and established that, I don't think you need to go back to it. That would be my opinion. I mean, you update people, but I don't think you need to continuously go back to it, right? It's uncomfortable.
I know it's uncomfortable, but is that the job of the telecast, to not make you uncomfortable? Or is the job of the telecast to bring you to broadcast what's on the field? Do you want them making all of your moral decisions for you? Because there are plenty of people. There are plenty of people made uncomfortable by kneeling during the national anthem. Like, what? Where am I supposed to draw the line? Maybe death is the line. I don't know, but I would hate to be the one responsible for having to make that decision.
Right.
And then I'm going to be wrong either way, because people are going to wonder, well, why didn't you stay with that? The choice they made is going to be the one criticized, but I suspect that if they'd made a different choice, that too would have been criticized. Because when I asked the question to you guys, I don't know the answer. I just wasn't blaming the broadcast for staying with it. I'm just like, okay, I'm uncomfortable. Yes, this is deeply uncomfortable, but it's also what's happening in this game, and you're just going to leave it? You're going to go to commercial? You're going to try and sell me diapers now? Like, what are you supposed to do?
Well, I think, like, people have this reaction as well. I remember, like, the Kevin Ware injury for Louisville, where his leg or his bone penetrated the skin, and people are, like, getting mad at CBS for showing that. I think death is a completely another conversation. And it was interesting because I was kind of going to be prepared to make a similar argument to you, which is a journalistic argument of an incident has happened on the field, and it is the obligation of the broadcast to let you know what is going on, right? You have the ability to broadcast what's going on. There was one shot, though, that made me very uncomfortable, and it was when they went to his weeping wife.
His wife, yeah.
And that was like, now it's a little voyeuristic at this point, where it's like, I don't need to see, you know, a broadcast tragedy, and on top of that we're showing her wife, like, showing, you know, the medical process. And by the way, that medical team, holy shit, what a job that
they saved his life.
They 100% saved his life. And you mentioned the captain, Simon Kerr, who did a brilliant job of keeping his passageway opened and all these things that happened. It was an incredible tribute to humanity. They chanted his name afterwards, and it's brilliant that he's still alive. But my feeling was that it should be broadcast up until the point that you see his weeping wife. It's like, come on, guys, like, this is way too far.
But do we get the heroism of the captain? Do we get to see someone act like the captain?
You can tell me about it, Dan. I mean, for me, I'm just saying for me.
I agree. I think the broadcast can tell you what's happening and not show you what's happening. I think that's the difference in a newscast. You don't have to necessarily tune into a sporting event and be witnessing someone coming back to life. I think that's a completely different category than when you turn on the news and you're watching a war zone and you see that type of thing. The audience expectations are completely different for those types of things. But I agree with Witty that this happens in college sporting events a lot, where a player will get injured and the director will cut to a shot of their parents in the stands. And I think that that is gratuitous and really unquestionably uncalled for.
Yeah, I mean, this happened in a college basketball game this past season. Remember with Keontae Johnson at the University of Florida, where he passed out in the middle of a game, and there are some questions as to whether or not he died on the field. But in terms of distinctions, I think this is different, because normally ESPN would have commentators at the stadium, right? And they could tell you with their own eyes. But because of COVID, no one is at the ground. They don't have on-site reporters. Really, the only eyes that they have on this incident are the scenes that they're getting from the host broadcaster, which, by the way, we should absolve ESPN of some criticism here, because they're not in charge of which shots are being taken. So as people are getting mad at them for putting his weeping wife on television, that wasn't their decision. They're taking a feed from the stadium that's being produced by somebody else.
It's also easier to just sort of attack an entity for your discomfort. But let me ask the question a different way. Where's the line before that on your discomfort? If we're in agreement, yes, don't show me a death, and we didn't know that he was dying, and we didn't know what it was, and he is not dead. But if death is indeed okay, that's crossing the line, and weeping wife, that's crossing the line. How much before death do I need to go before you guys aren't going to yell at the broadcaster for, I was made uncomfortable by Ware's leg snapping during a Louisville basketball game? Because I really don't know. I am asking the question, and I'm not taking a side on this. I'm sort of looking at it, and I'm like, if you're uncomfortable as a viewer, your criticism is going to go somewhere. If you are left sitting there watching something and you are uncomfortable, that is not going to go without complaint from you. You are going to have to put that helplessness, that anger, that sadness, that discomfort, you're going to have to put the blame for it somewhere, because you did not tune into a sporting event to feel that. But where else do I put it? Because Joe Theismann's leg snapped on television in a way that made Lawrence Taylor mortified and call the paramedics from the sideline.
And they went back to that a few times, right? Showed replays of that.
Well, it's one of the most famous videos you will see in sport. And after the fact, we know it's just a broken leg, and it's disgusting, but it's just a broken leg.
I think injuries, though, are things that broadcasters prepare themselves for, but this is something that rarely happens, which is why everyone was left completely unprepared. And I really think it has to do with the audience's expectations for what you're going to see when you turn on a sporting event. You expect to see players get injured, unfortunately. That's the nature of sports. But this is the line. And like, we saw the line, and the line was crossed, I think, for a lot of people.
That right there is the reason that Chris Bosh, even though he had a doctor clear him, was not allowed to play basketball again, because the Miami Heat and the NBA could not sanction, when we knew that that was the risk, right? With Erickson, we didn't know that that was the risk. That fell out of the sky as a total surprise. With Chris Bosh, we knew the risk. If there are blood clots here, he can die on the court, and it's the reason his career ended.
And in terms of that line, like, I do think I'm a fair absolutist in terms of what I'd want to see there. I at that point on that broadcast, the only thing that is relevant, it's not the game, it's not what the people in the studio think about what's going on, it's not what the commentators think, is this guy going to live? And so, yeah, that might make people squeamish, but I'm okay with that being broadcast. Again, just don't show kind of the tragic elements of people reacting to it. But if you want to show me kind of the medical process of how they kept him alive, and look, the Denmark players formed a wall around Christian Eriksen so that he can have some privacy. One of the Finland fans actually gave the Denmark players a flag so that they can hold it over him to cover him and potentially even cover his dead body if that happened. But like, I actually think in that spot, the broadcast has an obligation to show you. And if you don't want to see it, you can switch the channel. But I actually think they have an obligation to essentially report on a news story unfolding in front of their eyes.
You can report on it without showing it, Chris. There's still a man fighting for his life. There's still a family that's concerned. There's a wife concerned about her husband. There's a family that's concerned about their loved one. I mean, you could do that without showing. You want to see the medical team and the process they go through in bringing him back? And I would say the family might feel differently about that.
And so what do I do with this? What do I do with prayer circle around a football player that you don't know is paralyzed on the field? What do you do? What do you do with that? Because I'm telling you, there aren't rules on some of this stuff. And I understand how it is that people arrive at just an alarming discomfort. But they continued playing. They resumed the game. They still didn't know he was alive, and hey, the machine needs to keep moving. We got a game and we got paying customers. They didn't even delay it a day. Those players thought that they did not know whether he was okay. They did not know whether he was going to die at the hospital. And the machine kept moving despite your discomforts, despite their discomforts.
Which I also think, and maybe Whittingham, you disagree because you're a bigger soccer fan than me. That was not the right call. And I know that apparently the players said that they were okay with it. And then I heard that some of them weren't. And like, it was kind of like, we're not really sure what happened there yet. But there has to be prevailing rules in place and prevailing structures in place for when something like this happens. That's why you have an organizing league who organizes these tournaments, right? I don't understand why they were allowed
to play. I don't know how you prepare for a sudden death like that, or
the possibility. Well, you can't prepare for it, but once it happens, I'm with Smitty on this. Like, that game should be canceled. There are bigger concerns here than a soccer game.
Yeah, people thought that the next game that followed, which is Belgium and Russia, that had a few players in it that were teammates of Christian Eriksen's, should have been canceled as well. They played as well. So apparently, the reporting is that Denmark was essentially given the choice. You play now or you play tomorrow at noon, which was essentially like in 15 hours from when the game ended. And basically the players are like, look, we're already in this state, we're already here, let's just get it over with. And it was actually, in terms of their chances in the Euros, I know this is completely irrelevant, but losing at home to Finland was not the result that they would have wanted in order to progress to the next round. But yeah, I mean, these tournaments are on a very tight schedule. The whole soccer schedule as a whole is on a very tight schedule. They've built in some like
tight
contingency.
Schedule is such tight schedule. I understand what you're saying, but the guy's fighting for his life. Sorry, you died, but we got a schedule to grab. Look, Chris is saying it out loud, but they resumed the goddamn game. Like, it's not like they weren't thinking, hey, we're on a tight schedule, let's get this body out of here and let's bring another one in here. We're on a tight schedule.
We should also say
this is what I mean. Like, this is why you have a governing body. They're supposed to take into account contingencies for dramatic, life-changing events that could happen during a game. Like, the same thing happened during the pandemic last year where the NCAA kind of punted and they were like, all right, SEC, ACC, Big Ten, you guys figure it out. And then the players had this whole player movement. And it's like, no, like, the people making these decisions are the people who are supposed to be in charge of these things. It's not up to the players if they should play during a public health crisis. It's not up to Denmark's players if they should play after their teammate might have just died on the field. Like, there should be structures in place for if something like this were to happen. That's why those governing bodies in these leagues make money.
I think the giant squid should handle it. I think the giant squid, because they're smarter than the rest of us in governing bodies, maybe they have a solution for this.
But the giant squid would have said, wait, and let's figure this out first. And then, you know, we would have said, all hail giant squid.
But I did not realize they asked the players at Denmark. I did not realize that happened. And they wanted to continue playing. I mean, they probably should be. Not us, not anyone else. They should be the people who decide if they want to continue to play, right? It's their friend, it's their teammate who's ill, right?
And reportedly, Christian Eriksen got on FaceTime with the team and said, go on, keep playing. And look, I mean, that's like, you know, you appreciate a man's wishes at that point, but also, like, if some of them are in a mental state where they almost just watch, like, Kasper Schmeichel, the goalkeeper, and Simon Kjær, the captain, who we've referenced, are, like, legitimate friends and, like, you know, longtime teammates. They've been together for a decade on this national team, and they've been kind of the bedrock of a team that is kind of surprising. Like, you wouldn't expect Denmark to be as good at soccer as they are, and they've been the bedrock for why they are now. So they have gone through a lot together. So the idea that, you know, they can just be pressed right into action. And Kasper Schmeichel eventually made a save that led to Finland's only goal. Made a mistake that led to Finland's only goal. And who knows if he was in the right mental state to play. But, like, in theory, they're respecting the wishes of their teammate.
Right. And like, that's the question. Like, are these people, are these players in the right mental state to decide we should finish this game today? Or are we being forced in between a rock and a hard place by UEFA? Either it's now or tomorrow at noon, which neither solution is good for them. We just saw our teammate almost die on the field. And now you're pressuring us into making this decision on the spot about whether or not to finish this game. How do you do that after just witnessing a traumatic event during the game that you're playing?
Stugatz, as the think pieces were written about fans and their relationship with the athlete because a bottle's being thrown at Kyrie Irving and Trae Young is being spit on and Russell Westbrook is having popcorn dumped on him, I was thinking to myself along the lines of one of the things I like about the Red Zone is it cuts out all of the clutter. It also is more dehumanizing about what's actually happening on the field, because if there's an injury, I don't have to see it. I'm watching football for 7 hours on Sunday and I'm never seeing they leave injuries to go to someplace else where there aren't injuries.
It's not the injury zone, Dan. It's the Red Zone channel.
I understand. Yes. And so one of the things that's happening in that sport, I appreciate that you as an elaboration, that it's not the injury zone. Mm-hmm. That's a totally different channel that evidently Whittingham would be watching because he likes watching medical procedures on the field. It'd be a very lowly rated channel, but one of the things that happens in football is somehow, even though you have a lot of information, including brains being donated to science because people are killing themselves in order to end their lives and end the pain in football on occasion, one of the things that happens with the dehumanization is you know that football is violent, but you don't know how violent, because you don't feel it on Monday mornings. And leaving those games and those injuries and those prayer circles and the paralysis and the fact that an ambulance is on the sideline on call in football in the way it probably isn't in some of these sports that aren't as violent, I believe contributes to the dehumanization of these entertainers, because we don't want to look at it. Because it makes us uncomfortable. Who wants to see a prayer circle in the middle of their barbecue? In the middle of 10 people at their house wearing dolphin jerseys? Who wants to see a bunch of warrior gladiators kneeling and weeping next to some dude that they think has lost the use of his limb?
Chris Whittingham.
The medical procedures is what Chris, the science is what Whittingham.
No one wants to see it, Dan. It's listen, sports is a place you go to have fun, to escape from reality, to get away from some of your stress, some of your problems in your everyday life. And of course, no one wants to see that. They want to move away from it as quickly as possible.
But we all kind of, somewhere in the back of your head is a thought that while watching a football game, somebody might die, right? Like it's a possibility if remote. It is a possibility, and I don't think we've properly kind of vetted, I guess you can say, our thoughts on when that will happen. What's the media reaction? What's our reaction? What's the broadcast responsibility? And I do kind of wonder if this is like a thought exercise for a lot of people that cover NFL football.
Chris,
to be like, what happens if somebody dies?
No, instead of analyzing it, though, it's so much easier to say, don't show me that. I don't want to see it. Just resume the game when that's not there. Like, that's what the broadcast was getting in terms of anger from the public because of all of the things that we're talking about. I came here for fun. Don't show me the awful thing. I'm not here for awful things.
Whittingham, do you think the NFL has a plan in place in case, like, the worst case scenario happens, someone dies during a game? Do you think they've ever considered that that is a possibility and they would know what to do? They have a plan.
Chris said that, and I said to myself, I don't actively think that while watching football ever. Like, that's not a thought that I have. Somebody's going to die here, even though, as he mentions it, it's a possibility, obviously.
I've never thought it as well, but that is interesting, the question that Smitty's asking, the point that Chris brings up, because you would think if they don't have a plan in place, they probably do now, or at least they're thinking of one, right, moving forward?
Yeah, this is definitely a thought exercise for the NFL. I mean, I would presume that the league has, I mean, like, medically a plan, but in terms of, like, how you handle, you know, the PR afterwards, how you handle playing of games after that, like, do you suspend the season and take a month off? What's the appropriate amount of time in between a player dying and us resuming action again? What do the broadcasters have a responsibility to show? What's the reporting? Like, I think there's probably a huge number of steps here that are not really thought about that much.
And my point is, if you're Roger Goodell and you make $60 million a year, like, you better have thought of everything. Like, you better have a plan in place for these things. And that's where I think the disconnect is on watching the game yesterday. There was no plan in place. The broadcasters didn't know what to do. The people feeding the footage to the broadcast didn't know what to do. People on the field didn't know what to do. The team didn't know what to do. UEFA clearly had no idea what to do. They just wanted to make money, keep playing the games.
Oh, but there's going to be no right there. There's going to be so much discomfort that we're going to need to put our criticism somewhere. There is not going to be, no matter what the plan is of handling something like that, it's not like it's going to be handled and we're not going to put, we're going to be like, oh, that was a terrible tragedy. We're going to blame somebody, because in sports, we always have to blame somebody. If we're uncomfortable, someone somewhere is going to get blamed. And I certainly don't think $60 million Goodell has the answer for anything, given what I just saw happen in that sport when they were like, yes, we're against kneeling against the flag. Oh, never mind. No, never mind. Our Patrick Mahomes is on a video saying that he's on the other side of this. Let's go to the other side on this. We were so wrong.
Back to the games.
Back to the games. Please don't notice that we don't know what we're doing. Just keep handing us money.
I just think you mitigate harm. Like, there's never going to be a perfect answer, obviously, but like, there was no mitigation of harm done yesterday. Everyone was just completely taken by surprise by this.
It makes me think that we need to prepare for some catastrophic incident to happen. Because, like, if something happened where one of you all, I mean, I know, I kind of know CPR, but I just don't know if we're prepared. Like, lot of incidents. I mean, I guess what you're saying is this is a sporting event with a lot of people around, but, you know, I just don't know how prepared any of us are for just a catastrophic thing to happen that no one expects.
What do you mean you kind of know CPR?
Yeah, like, last year or the year before.
Hold on a second. You were designated the like safety coordinator for the studio and had to go to the courses for this. Why do you kind of know
honestly,
CPR? You're the one that needs to know.
I know I kind of know CPR because they change that thing every couple of years. Sometimes it's 15 and 2, sometimes it's 30 and 2. Yeah. It over the years, like the official
there's evolution in how to revive a person from death?
Yes, over the years it has changed. It used to be 30 and 2, and then it went from to 15 and 2
Guillermo,
in terms of pumps and breaths.
Put it on the poll, please, at Levitard Show. Are you at all soothed medically when someone says, I kind of know CPR?
You know, head tilt, chin lift. I know the basics.
I have to tell you about these miniature gun models called goat guns. My guy loves building and collecting them. I was most surprised by the complexity of these models. They're really high quality. His dad and friends always ask about it, and if you ask me, these get a little too much attention around here. Shop for yours at GoatGuns.com.